And with that, we'll move on to the next talk from Dr. Smaldone on the role of active surveillance and biopsy in the management of the small incidental renal mass.
All right, so I've been tasked with covering active surveillance for small renal tumors in about 15 minutes, so I'll try to stay on time. My disclosures, I'm a consultant for the Healthcare Improvement Foundation. So as they've so eloquently said before me, the incidence of renal cell carcinoma is rapidly rising, largely due to the increased utilization of cross-sectional imaging. And as a result, there's been a stage migration towards localized disease or stage one disease, which is less than 7 centimeter tumors. And the treatment options for stage one renal masses are multiple. There's lots of different options for what you can do. There's three existing guidelines right now. There's the AUA guideline, the European urology guidelines, and then the new ASCO guidelines. And surgical excision is considered the gold standard really across the board, whether it's partial nephrectomy or radical nephrectomy. And active surveillance has largely been a secondary consideration. And so oftentimes we're faced with the question when someone's diagnosed with an incidental renal mass is, how do you treat that patient? Radical versus partial nephrectomy or open versus minimally invasive surgery? When really the question is, should we treat the patient? So I like this figure. I think it sort of highlights the conundrum we're faced with here, which is who do you help the most with local therapy? Tumors that very quickly grow to cause symptoms and death, there's an unclear benefit with if surgery will be enough. Tumors that slowly grow to cause symptoms may be the optimal candidates for cure. And then there's this large pool of patients with tumors that may never cause symptoms or are non-progressive in nature, and these ultimately may not require treatment at all. And so identifying who this population is are the ideal candidates for active surveillance. And as both Alex and Ray said, the decision to treat should be based on malignant potential, the risks of therapy, and competing risks to mortality. So in considering clinical decision making for small renal tumors, there's the oncologic risk. We know these tumors for the large part are curable with surgery. There's procedural risk, which is complications from surgery which are primarily related to the anatomic complexity of the tumors. There's renal function risk. Do they have a normal contralateral kidney? Is there pre-existing chronic kidney disease? And then there's patient risks from age and comorbidity. When looking at contemporary treatment trends using secondary data sources, we've seen there's been a dramatic increase in partial nephrectomy over the last 10 to 15 years. And this has been the work of many expert urologists recognizing that with tumor-related factors or recurrence risks that are roughly the same between removing the whole kidney or part of the kidney, there's been this increased emphasis towards partial nephrectomy. However, there have been stable rates of expectant management, which means the proportion of patients undergoing observation has stayed relatively flat over the same time period. So when considering expectant management for any type of malignancy, you really have to define the terms. And so there's two concepts, largely derived, at least for us, out of the prostate cancer space. There's watchful waiting, which is expectant management until development of symptoms from local progression or distant metastases. And then there's true active surveillance with curative intent. So active surveillance for kidney cancer is an initial period of close observation with serial imaging to determine tumor growth kinetics and then best select candidates for either prolonged observation versus delayed intervention. So keys to a successful active surveillance strategy, you need to have reliable indicators of malignant and metastatic potential. You need adequate risk assessment tools at the patient, procedural, and tumor level. You need to have a good understanding of the natural history of the disease under observation. You need to have effective treatments if intervention ultimately is required, and then you need clearly defined triggers for intervention. So what we've shown from the existing literature, and this is largely out of data from the Mayo Clinic, is that tumor size is related to malignant histology, and that approximately 20 to 30% of small renal masses are benign. Tumor size is also associated with tumor grade, and the majority of small renal masses, so again, those less than 4 centimeters, are low grade. They've also shown that the risk of synchronous metastatic disease increases with each 1 centimeter increase in tumor size, and the proportion of tumors less than 3 centimeters that present with metastatic disease is very low. So now, when faced with the task of quantifying patient risk, there's indices like the Charlson Comorbidity Index, Dr. Kudakov, my partner and our colleagues at Fox Chase developed a clinical nomogram taking into account prognostic variables like race, sex, tumor size, age, and Charlson Comorbidity Index, and they use this to quantify competing risks of death, both from other cause mortality and then kidney cancer-specific mortality. So just to give an example of this, and this hints at what Ray was talking about before, on the left you have an 80-year-old African-American male who has a history of a heart attack, moderate renal insufficiency, and a Charlson score of 3, who presents with a 4-centimeter renal mass. His risk of non-kidney cancer-related death using this nomogram at 5 years is close to 50% and only 5% from kidney cancer. Whereas a 75-year-old Caucasian female with no significant comorbidities, Charlson score of 0, presenting with a 7-centimeter renal mass, her 5-year risk of kidney cancer-specific death is 13% compared to only 8% for other cause mortality. So I think this helps sort of structure your conversations regarding clinical decision-making with these patients. For procedural risk assessment, this should be known sort of everyone in this room because it's the NISQIP surgical risk calculator. And what these and other calculators like this have shown is that it's patient risk more than the type of procedure that drives the risk of surgical complications. And so the question really should be, should the high-risk patient have surgery, not what type of surgery should the high-risk patient have? So most times when evaluating a patient with a newly diagnosed renal mass, it's radiographic characteristics that are used, but there is an increased emphasis on biopsying these tumors. Summarizing the literature on renal mass biopsy in one slide is difficult, but basically what they've shown is that the accuracy for malignant versus benign disease is very high with a positive predictive value of close to 100%, and that the false positive and false negative rate is very low, less than 5%. If someone undergoes a non-diagnostic biopsy, so it means maybe they missed the tumor, if you repeat biopsies in this patient, you can accurately characterize them about 80% of the time. The risk of complications from biopsy is very low. This quote's 5%, but the risk of really serious complications requiring hospitalization or intervention is less than 1%. And biopsy is also notoriously inaccurate for tumor grade, which might be the real limitation of biopsy in this space. And that could be due to intratumoral heterogeneity or just inability to classify grade on small samples. So there are some advocates for biopsying all of these tumors. At least in my practice, what I found, I asked the question, is there a clinical benefit to histologic risk assessment? Will it drive your management? And so where I primarily use biopsy is for a small renal mass already on active surveillance that started to grow. And so there's this uncertainty as to whether or not you should intervene, knowing if it's high versus low grade disease or malignant versus benign histology definitely impacts management under those in that setting. So just a clinical caveat to the question, should all small renal masses be biopsied? The PET scan on the left is a patient with lymphoma who had an incidentally diagnosed renal mass. A biopsy was arranged by his medical oncologist before he met me. And this is his ruptured tumor that required a nephrectomy about 6 months down the line. There are new imaging modalities that I'll briefly touch on here that are helpful for direct histologic assessment. There's SestiMeB PET, which is helpful differentiating between oncocytoma and renal cell carcinoma. And then there are new types of PET scans that can be useful for identifying clear cell renal cell carcinoma. These are largely being used, evaluated in trials right now and haven't gone real time yet. So to again shift gears, to understand the natural history of small renal masses under observation, the current evidence base is pretty limited. There's no level one evidence currently. And the existing evidence base consists of largely institutional cohorts, observational data, pooled and meta-analytic studies, and prospective registries. When evaluating sort of the cumulative data that's available, what this early experience has shown is that with intermediate term follow-up, these tumors tend to grow minimally over time, a few millimeters per year. There's a large proportion of these tumors that don't grow at all or show a zero net growth rate over time. When evaluating long-term outcomes, in these series, anywhere from 4 to 65 percent of these patients ultimately progress to definitive treatment, and the rate of metastasis with intermediate term follow-up, so at least 5-year follow-up, is very low, single-digit percent. They also, highlighting what was mentioned again before, There's a large discrepancy between overall and cancer-specific survival in these series, where the other cause mortality rates are significantly higher than the kidney cancer-specific mortality rates. So since linear growth rate, or change in tumor size on serial imaging studies, tends to be the key trigger for intervention in most of these patients, they've looked at radiographic characteristics that are predictive of a rapid linear growth rate. And there have been very weak associations shown with initial tumor size, symptomatic presentation, younger patient age, and anatomic complexity. But what they very clearly showed in these studies is that if a patient has a rapid linear growth rate, that is associated with malignant potential, need for delayed intervention, and risk of metastasis. There's been recent work over the past few years looking at the natural history of benign renal lesions, such as angiomyolipomas, oncocytic neoplasms, oncocytomas, and then malignant cystic disease, which tends to be fairly indolent in general. And so what's important to take from these studies is that benign lesions also grow over time. And this, again, strengthens the argument for use of renal mass biopsy with growing small renal masses on active surveillance. There's been some observational data to date. This was an instrumental variable analysis in which patients treated with partial nephrectomy or radical nephrectomy had a significantly less risk of cancer-specific mortality than those treated with non-surgical management. But these differences were not statistically significant in patients that were greater than 75 years of age. I'm going to skip this slide. There have also been pooled studies looking at the separate institutional studies that are all evaluating active surveillance. This was came from our group in 2012. And what this sort of highlighted was that, again, progression to metastasis with short-term or intermediate-term follow-up is a rare event. Tumors progressing to metastatic disease were larger and had faster growth kinetics, and no metastatic tumors were noted in patients with tumors less than 3 centimeters, those that showed zero net growth over time, and or tumors that minimally grew. There are currently 3 prospective registries evaluating patients on active surveillance. There's a Canadian group which, on their initial publications, have shown that local progression and need for delayed intervention is rare, and development of metastatic disease is a rare event. And then from the Johns Hopkins group, which is a multi-institutional consortium, a very large group of patients, shows, again, linear growth rates of 0.11 centimeters per year, slightly higher rates of local progression due to the definitions that they used, and again, need for delayed intervention was less than 15%, and no patients developed metastatic disease. I think it's important to consider sort of patient anxiety if being treated with active surveillance. They know they have something that could possibly be a malignancy. There is uncertainty as to whether or not this may progress or cause them harm. And so what this study showed is that despite baseline differences in quality of life that persisted over time, mental health was not adversely affected in the active surveillance group. So I think it's important to consider that with adequate counseling for these patients, you can really get them through active surveillance and have anxiety not be a real issue. Our group several years ago demonstrated that if you were on active surveillance, they evaluated what the role of delayed intervention would be and what possibilities for treatment existed. And so they found that of patients treated with active surveillance, if they went on to require therapy, it was physician-directed in about 40% of patients, and interval tumor growth it led to the decision for treatment in about 40% of patients as well. But despite these periods of observation, close to 80% were able to undergo nephron-sparing surgery via a minimally invasive approach for a majority of them. So what I think this rehash of the data shows is that management can be cautiously delayed without limiting your available treatment options or incurring a higher risk of disease progression. And so as our familiarity and our comfort level with watching small tumors has grown, the indications for active surveillance for renal masses has expanded as well. And so there are now institutional cohorts that have reported on active surveillance for larger tumors, or greater than 4 centimeters or greater than 7 centimeters. And then there's also been a phase 2 trial in metastatic disease of active surveillance off of systemic therapy, which showed that for a disease that that does not grow or change radiographically over time, you can avoid systemic therapy oftentimes for months, even years. So to summarize all of this data, you know, what have we learned so far? Tumor size predicts malignant potential, high-grade disease, and risk of metastasis. Tumors less than 3 centimeters are most likely low-grade tumors, and a good third of them are benign. A substantial proportion of small renal masses exhibit zero net growth over time, and these may be the ideal candidates for active surveillance. Linear growth rate is currently the most reliable indication for delayed intervention, and even benign masses grow. And so lesions on active surveillance exhibiting positive growth kinetics may be the most appropriate candidates for biopsy. And then again, ideal candidates for prolonged active surveillance are tumors less than 3 centimeters that exhibit minimal growth over time, and then again, that's due to their very low risk of metastasis. There are unanswered questions currently. So we know that initial period of active surveillance to determine tumor growth kinetics to best select candidates for delayed intervention is a reasonable strategy with intermediate term follow-up. But there's currently no standardized entry criteria or definitions for progression that are consistent across existing active surveillance protocols. There's considerable debate as to the utility of renal mass biopsy. There's no consensus regarding the frequency or type of imaging used for surveillance. There are no clearly defined triggers for delayed intervention. And as observational studies have severe limitations due to selection bias and inability to sort of define the right cohorts, ultimately, what will be the best data source for comparative effectiveness evaluation? Unfortunately, a prospective trial in this country randomizing patients to active surveillance versus definitive intervention is probably not going to happen. And so how will these knowledge gaps be addressed? And so this is the prospective cohort out of Beth Israel Deaconess, Johns Hopkins, Columbia. It's called the DISARM Registry. And I think this is where we're going to get the answers to those questions. They have discrete entry criteria. So it's adult patients asymptomatic from tumors less than 4 centimeters. There's an optional renal mass biopsy. They have defined triggers for intervention, which is linear growth rate of more than a half a centimeter per year. It grows to be greater than 4 centimeters per year, or there's signs, you know, clinical symptoms. There's established imaging throughout the study, so it's either an ultrasound every 6 months for 2 years, or an ultrasound every 12 months for 3 years. And there are comparative effectiveness aims built into the study evaluating survival outcomes and quality of life. So are you going to do questions in between each or at the end?
We'll just do it at the end of the cases.
Thank you very much.